Hey, folks. Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. So the idea behind the podcast is simple. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Today, we're continuing our conversation with Teresa Sowers on suffering. Teresa, welcome back to Heartline.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
On our last program, we spent time talking about your son Nathan's illness and death. Today, we want to look at the second half of that journey, the sexual abuse. Somewhere along the line, some deeply disturbing memories of abuse came to surface for you, and this added a whole new layer to your grief and challenges to your relationship with God, as you tried to bring congruence to how a loving God could have allowed that to happen. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. After Nathan died, about a year and a half after Nathan died, I was well on my way into healing and beginning to find purpose and joy in life again. And through a set of circumstances, memories from being sexually abused as a small child by my grandfather started resurfacing and creating incredible havoc in my life, and was very much at a point, you know, of getting my head above water with the grief with Nathan, and just was really struggling with how and why God could allow this into my life now. Just had a real attitude toward God with that. And then to try and wrap my head around the reality of having been sexually abused by my grandfather, that was just an incredibly painful and difficult journey of my whole life. The foundation, I felt like the foundation of my life had been ripped out from underneath me, and was very much struggling to figure out who I was, what did this mean as far as what I thought to be true, and it just was a very difficult time. And of course, again, God very much a focal point of the struggle and the grief and the suffering with that.
So you were angry at God?
Again, mm-hmm. Very much so. How could by this point was very well on my way into having a true relationship with God and understanding more about what that meant. And with that, it made it even more difficult. Is how could a loving God allow a little girl to be abused and to be abused by her grandfather repeatedly through a number of years? I couldn't begin to wrap my head around that. It just didn't.
It just doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm. No.
So these thoughts just came out of the blue. You started having these flashbacks.
Yes, I was one day at a conference at the American Association of Christian Counselors conference, and was in the middle of praise and worship and was praising God in everything that He had done in and through my life with Nathan's death. I was praising Him for the healing. God had just done some really neat and incredible things into my life, and I felt a call on my life into grief ministry, and it was just at a real spiritual, on a spiritual mountaintop, if you will. And within 24 hours, was sitting in a workshop. The speakers were being introduced, And in the middle of the introductions, a slideshow began going off in my head. At first, very scattered, very vague, nothing real definitive. But as the pictures continued, the emotion that came with them, just incredible, overwhelming fear and terror. And the pictures became more clear, more intense, and lasted pretty much the entire workshop. By the time I became aware of my surroundings again and the pictures had stopped, they were closing the workshop in prayer. And so it lasted the workshop.
And so what were you feeling besides fear and terror? Were you feeling anger at God at that point? What was going on for you then?
Anger did not come at that point. I was just totally confused as to what just happened. I have no idea what took place in that workshop. I was just totally and absolutely confused with what had gone off in my head. What did that mean? This couldn't be. My grandfather would not have done that. Denial again.
Yeah, so you were hitting that wall of denial.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely hitting it.
You said something really powerful as you and I talked earlier, and that is, if God allowed it, meaning suffering, there has to be something in it for us to fight for.
Absolutely.
I believe that something is our hearts. So here you are, just going through this brutal thing with your son. You know, he died, and now you get this. What was left to fight for you? I know your daughter was a big reason to fight after you lost Nathan, but at this point, was that still an impetus for you to keep moving forward?
It was. Certainly, if it hadn't been for my daughter, I really don't know what path I would have taken. I'm not sure if I would have chosen life. Certainly, she was a major factor into me getting the help that I needed following this, revelation. Certainly, she was a key factor in that. But by this point, I really had at least begun to realize that Nathan's death was very much an attempt for the enemy to destroy me, to get me down, to keep me down, and had with Nathan's death begun the journey of I was determined to rise above it, to live. I made that choice to live, and that really was set in me. And though it took a lot of hard work, that was kind of the foundation that I was coming from in dealing with the memories of the sexual abuse. Being determined, if Nathan's death was not going to destroy me, then by golly, this would not either.
Yeah. And I think you make a really good point. I think somewhere along the line, we have to choose life. It's all about choice. No matter what we're going through, no matter what struggle, whether it's an addiction, an eating disorder, we have to make a choice to live. And so you made that choice. And I think that's a personal question that everybody has to answer. You know, am I going to?
It is.
Yeah.
It
absolutely.
Is. I reached that with Nathan, certainly, and had to make that conscious decision of am I going to allow this to destroy me, or am I not only going to survive, because I think that you can choose just to survive, or are you going to choose to go on and live life? And it was not enough for me to just survive. I decided that I needed to live again, and it was the same with the abuse. It took a little bit longer for me because it so challenged everything that my life had been built on. It truly, Nathan's death shattered my heart. The abuse shattered the foundation that my life was built on. And so it really was going to a point of beginning to clear out the rubble from the destruction and beginning to rebuild again, and to build my life on truth, not on lies.
So once you broke through that wall of denial, would you say that was a really huge step on moving forward? Because denial is a huge roadblock to us for grieving, identifying losses, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the first step, is accepting the reality of what you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Not easy, but it is that first step. And then...
Well, dealing with the guilt and shame that comes along with that, that was probably another mm-hmm. piece for you.
It was. Shame was huge in dealing with the abuse. Even though as a small child, I did come to a point where I realized that the abuse was not my fault and was able to, you know, to put that at the feet of my grandfather. There still is a lot of shame that comes with that, just bound up in shame.
And so was the counseling pivotal in helping you work through that shame and guilt?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I would spend about 5 years in counseling, coming to terms with the abuse. And it's not so much coming to terms with the actual abuse as much as it is what the abuse does to you.
Mm-hmm.
The lies that it causes you to build your life on, the lies about yourself and who you are and what you are. And of course, the lies that you believe about God as a result of being abused.
Oh, absolutely, Teresa. That is the hugest part of what I teach my clients. And those lies, the enemy is so crafty. He deposits those lies right at the formative periods in our life when we're young. And then we live out of the beliefs that tell us we're no good, we're shameful, we're not lovable, all of that. And then that just... You know, that just is how we behave.
Exactly. And if the enemy can hook you, even on one lie, but with abuse comes many lies. But if he can hook you as a child with one lie and you build your life operating out of even just one lie, he has you in bondage, in captivity, and you spend your life there until that is revealed to you. Or until you make a decision, no more.
Absolutely.
And that's what I did. The lies were revealed, and I had lost too much already with Nathan and having been abused and Mom. And it was almost not a choice for me, because I was determined that I was going to live and walk in the freedom that Christ died to give me. I was determined that the enemy, he had me in captivity all those years and kept adding layer after layer after layer, and I was bound and determined to be free and to walk in that freedom. And I worked hard at it. One of my counselors told me that he had never seen somebody so determined to be free, and I was, because he had me for so many years. I made it no more. No
wow.
More.
That's so powerful. Where was your husband in all this? Because when couples lose a child, statistics say that 85% of marriages end in divorce. And that's because men and women grieve differently. There's specific gender differences in grief. Men are more instrumental grievers. They focus on work. They focus on tasks. They stay busy. They often shut down emotionally. Whereas women, on the other hand, are intuitive grievers. They're emotional. They need to express their grief through talking and telling the story, retelling the story. So it's easy to see how those differences can cause problems within a marriage. Can you talk about your experience with that?
Sure. Dave and I are no different than those statistics. We grieved very differently. We had lost a son. Both of us had lost a son. But being man, woman, mother, father, we grieved very differently. Our personalities are very different. He did just what you said. He threw himself into being busy and to working and that kind of a thing. I, on the other hand, was pretty much non-functioning. I would do the bare minimum and then spent much of my time in fetal position, laying on the couch. Some days didn't even want to get up. And eventually found my link through a grief support group and pastoral counseling. My husband tried those things, but that just was not working for him. He had to walk out his grief in a different kind of way. And he didn't understand my way of grieving. I didn't understand his. And it caused quite a bit of tension and friction. Because he didn't grieve the way I did, I assumed that he wasn't grieving, wasn't even trying to deal with Nathan's death. And he would look at me, and I was such a mess. And we only by the grace of God are still together and just recently celebrated 25 years of marriage. I'm still not quite sure how we managed to do that because we were very much on different pages through the grieving process. And at some point, again, another decision, a conscious decision, that we had lost too much already. Losing a child was too much already, and for our marriage and family to also go down the toilet, we decided that we needed to fight and not allow that to happen. And slowly but surely, step by step, we began to get that back where we needed it to be.
Well, oftentimes when there's one sick child, the other child feels neglected or left out or not as valuable. That's all normal stuff. I mean, here you had a sick son. It required and demanded so much of your attention. But how did you bridge the gap with your daughter then after Nathan's death? Was there some hurts or unresolved stuff there that you wanted to address at some point?
Yes. With Nathan, Ashley was two at the time of being pregnant with Nathan. And so from that point until his death, I was very much an absent mother, in the hospital quite a bit, you know, taking care of him. So very absent. And once he died, was very emotionally not available. I just was very much struggling with my own grief. And so, again, not there for her. And once I got to a place of healing, beginning to live life again, I began to realize God showed me how my being absent had affected her. Even though, you know, I had a so-called legitimate excuse, you know, Nathan needed me in those times. Nevertheless, the fact was that I was not there for her as a mother should be. And so I went to her and asked her to forgive me for that. And wow. Made a promise to her that, to the best of my ability, from that point forward, I would be the mother that she needed me to be for her. And it was a turning point. It took time for her to begin to trust that I was going to be there and meant that, but it did eventually happen.
Mm.
So that's how it kind of played out for us.
Beautiful story of redemption and healing there with her.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got cancer. After all
yes.
this, I mean, you know, everybody that listens to this is like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? How much more can this woman endure? Walk us through that.
I was being followed. It was not unusual for me to have things to be followed. And my sister, my younger sister, was diagnosed in May of 2009 with breast cancer. And because I was being followed again with a spot, they decided that they should check that out sooner rather than later. And as a result, ended up discovered that I had cancer in both breasts. And it was not the spot that had been originally followed. One of the spots of cancer had become invasive, and so ended up having made the choice to have a double mastectomy, and we did chemo to make sure that we had gotten it all. And I wanted to make sure that I was doing everything I possibly could so that I could prevent it coming back. And so that's the route that we chose. And it was a very difficult road to walk. Chemo and all of the surgeries and procedures and things that I had done, it took quite a physical toll and, in turn, an emotional toll.
Anger at God here? I mean, come on now. You've had so many losses, so much suffering. What's going on in your heart at this point?
To be honest, I have to tell you that I did not, going through the cancer, I did not have anger. I did have questions, you know, why, Lord, what, Lord? So I did question. I struggled emotionally. You know, when you're faced with cancer, you know, you can't help but go down the path of, am I going to die? What does this mean? I want to live and see my grandchildren, you know, those kinds of things. And so you are faced with that. But I did not have the anger going through the cancer. I struggled emotionally and struggled with depression and, of course, the physical parts of that. My anger came a good bit later after having been declared cancer-free. And then it was kind of like I finally had an opportunity to reflect with cancer. And then, you know, of course, okay, well, my son died, I was abused, my mom died. It was after it was all over, and I was kind of catching my breath, the reality, and I was very angry at God again because of the history. You know, why? How could you? You know, after everything that we've been through, and then, you know, you're going to throw the cancer in there, and then you're going to throw some difficult circumstances in life, because aside from those things, you know, there are other things in life that can be difficult, relationships and ministry and different things. And so I just was quite honestly feeling sorry for myself that God, I had the mentality of that, God, you demand too much from me. That's honestly what I felt. You demand too much from me, and I can't do it. I don't like it. I don't think it's fair. But the reality, God, again, was gracious and let me vent and to express to him in a number of times. It was a process. And eventually he, after I had vented and dealt with my anger and frustration with him, very quietly let me know, not in an audible voice, but said to me, I'm not demanding anything of you. I'm inviting you to be part of what I'm doing in your life. I still don't understand why God has invited me into the arenas of sexual abuse and death and loss and trauma and cancer. I still don't understand that, and those are things that I certainly would not have chosen had I been given the option. But to look at it from the standpoint of being invited to be part of what God's doing and is going to do in and through those things, it's a totally different perspective to come at those things with.
Absolutely, yeah. You're switching lenses here. Instead of looking through the grid of, why, God, you're beating up on me, you've chosen to look at the redemptive aspect of this. God, how are you going to use this in your bigger plan and picture in my life and in the lives of others?
Yes, because if he allows it, it comes with the promise that he is going to redeem it. He is going to bring good out of it. That is a promise. And to be part of how he's going to use that and redeem that, again, I would not have chosen it, but it is very exciting to see the very things that the enemy through my life has meant to destroy me. It is very exciting to see and be part of how God is redeeming those things. And how he draws a line and says to the enemy, okay, you can only go this far. It's very exciting to have a different perspective. And no, I don't understand all the ins and outs and the whys and what fors. Some of it I still am not happy with. But to have at least a piece of some kind of understanding and to look at it from that perspective has been very, it was very life-changing for me.
Yeah. And I think answers aren't going to be the glue that holds it all together for us anyway. It's really going to be about Jesus.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so bullet points to summarize our time together. Let me see if I've heard what you've said. We go through suffering and loss, and we have a choice set before us, life or death. We have to choose life because God is about redemption. He wants us to fight the battle for our hearts. And he wants us to reinvest our hearts with a bigger plan and purpose in mind. And so somewhere along the line, we have to decide if what's happened to us will be the most important part of our story, or will it be what happens in us as a result of our suffering and loss? And today, what I'm hearing from you is that you're more fully alive than you ever dreamed of because you decided to fight the battle for your heart and reinvest it with a kingdom purpose in mind. You're also telling us to live life in the midst of the pain. Press on, don't isolate, because suffering and isolation has little meaning. Find people to walk alongside of you and tell the story. That's how healing comes, when we tell the story. The telling of the story over and over and over will lead us to healing. And you've got to find people to be real with. You obviously had folks that were walking alongside of you when the bottom dropped out that you could be real with. And there's groups out there, moms groups, grief groups, where you can find other people who have walked your journey so you don't want to go it alone. You also sought professional help, and you spent a number of years in counseling to walk through the multi-layered issues that you faced. And that takes courage. And perhaps most importantly, lament before God. I've heard you say that over and over throughout our time together. You lamented before God. You got angry at God. You told God how you felt. And I think our lament connects us to God because he was no stranger to suffering. So we can weep and wail and tell him about our anger and about the breaking of our hearts, because in doing so, he'll give us his. Anything else?
I think you summed it up very well.
Well, thank you, friend, for your faithfulness and your courage and for spending time with us today. Tell us how people can get your book, Nathan, and how can they contact you?
They can contact me. I self-published a book just about the Nathan story. I am in the process and would love to have a book about the sexual abuse, and then yet another book. My sister and I would like to write a book about what it was like for the two of us to go through breast cancer together. But they're in the works. The Nathan book, Still a Gift of God, that is available through me, and they can contact me by email or by phone. Those numbers are, the telephone number is 540-487-4619, or they can contact me through email at Isaiah61, and that's the numbers, 61, at Entelos, Entelos.net. And the book is $10, and if I need to ship it, it's $2 shipping.
Awesome. Teresa, thank you so much for being with us today and the willingness you've had to share your story. May God bless you.
God bless you. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.